This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisan and Noel Lim. 7.05 in the morning, Monday the 25th of January. In about 15 minutes, we're going to be giving you a roundup of all the latest news in Malaysian politics, and there has been quite a lot, including claims by Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim that a majority of MPs are against the national emergency. But before that, we are taking a look at the markets.
Sure, let's take a look at the US markets first. They closed over the weekend, a bit mixed here. The S&P 500 was down 0.3% at the close last week. Dow Jones was down 0.6%. The NASDAQ managed to eke out a gain. It was up just under 0.1% at the end of last week. Year to date, NASDAQ is up 5%, S&P up 2.3%, and the Dow Jones up 1.3%. Now, if you take a look closer to Asia, or the Asian region, it was predominantly red at the close last week. The Hang Seng was down 1.6%, and Shanghai Composite was down 0.4%. Japan was also down 0.4%, 0.5% thereabouts. Korea was down 0.6%. Singapore was down 0.9%. The only two markets in the green in the Asian region that I see here, Australia, which was up 0.2%, and Malaysia, which was up 0.1%. Again, Malaysia zigging when everyone zags.
So for some insight into global markets, this morning we're speaking with Stephen Innes, Global Chief Market Strategist at Axie. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us today. So in which direction do you expect the S&P 500 to trade, given the raft of US corporate earnings that were released this week? How's market sentiment shaping up now that Biden is also formally inaugurated as US President?
Cautiously zigzag, I think. I think we're going to go back into what I refer to as what could go wrong now mode. And that's really just a function of so much exuberance in the price right now. Focus will be on Washington, no doubt, because of the, they're crafting legislation to implement the Biden administration priorities over the next couple of weeks. And it appears that they're going to run into Republican stonewalls. That'll be probably one of the impediments. We've also got the Federal Reserve Board on tap on Wednesday. However, I don't think they're going to present much obstacle to risk. Unquestionably, the market continues to lean towards their average inflation target. We've seen good economic news in the U.S. Towards the end of last week. Bond yields didn't go up. The U.S. dollar didn't strengthen. This suggests that the markets are less concerned about the prospects of a near-term taper or even the possibility of a rate hike. So these are positives that the markets are going to continue to feed on. But ultimately, you know, the vaccine breakthroughs are what are going to make life a lot more functional. So in my view, the real focus falls back on the vaccines. And in that front, it looks optimistic. It appears that, the administration's walking in to targets that they've already set. You know, they're looking to get 1 million vaccines done per day in the U.S. And we're very close to that. So, you know, it's how far we can take it above those targets now is going to be the key for how risk comes back in my view.
Well, there are various lockdowns still in various countries, global, and this, and we look at the situation where a global chip shortage has been fueling a market rally for Malaysian semiconductor companies. What is causing this supply squeeze, and do you see some bullish trend among similar companies in the region?
You know, it's usually, I get more bullish when it's because of demand, but in this case, it's because of supply. There's just been a sudden shortage of semiconductors due to the disruptions in global supply. They just can't get commodities or get the parts, you know, floating to the right areas. Look, we've got huge manufacturing nations like China, and even the U.S. are ramping up automobile production because they're anticipating a huge demand for cars. Already seeing the secondhand market right now because just the lack of new cars. So this is part of the concerns right now. And obviously hoarding starts taking event. People want to stock up on inventory. So people are buying anything they can get their hands on, which is naturally driving prices up. Will this be a long-term trend? Well, it takes a while for supply chains to normalize. So I think we could be in this situation for quite a while to the benefit of Malaysia's semiconductor manufacturing industries.
Another aspect is the demand side, although you're more concerned about supply. What I understand, people would have bought the gadgets they need from home and they need to work from home last year. And these items could last at least 2 years. So what's the likelihood of demand spiking again this year for, gadgets?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's the stay-at-home narrative again. The longer we remain in these lockdowns, the more people will be working from home. But I am also of the view here that people will be working from home more often. I think we could see a tendency of a more rotation-type workforce. These are just my opinions, mind you. I mean, each company is going to organize themselves quite differently. But I'm looking at the fact that looking at the knock-on effect from some of the big global banks around the world, like Deutsche Bank, for instance, that doesn't mind their employees working from home. I think there'll be a lot of cases where companies will be quite willing to allow people to work from home, especially non-client front-facing jobs. So this is going to be good. I think, we're moving into the new age of this long-term super cycle and technology. That's my view. And I think the Asia story is the too big to miss story, given the number of people. And also the fact that, look, everywhere we go in our part of the world, everybody's looking at their handheld. So, I mean, let's face it, right? This trend is not going to change anytime soon.
So, Stephen, I'm not sure if you can answer this, though, but do you know where the who is facing the shortage of supply? Is it more the consumer gadget products, or is it the automakers? We mentioned earlier that there was also news that they were the ones who were facing chip shortages. Is it one or the other, or are they all equally facing the shortage?
Well, I think they're all facing the shortage, but ultimately was the ramp up in automobile manufacturing, which was a surprise, because we knew that the demand was there from the computer component side. It was this surprisingly large uptick in automobile manufacturing. Well, let's face it. Everybody wants to drive a car now. They feel safer in their cars rather than public transport. And this is going to be a knock-on effect, which is going to provide a good bounce to the automobile industry. Positive. Everybody, in my view, that can afford a car. And fortunately, central banks around the world are making those cars affordable. If not, the companies themselves, by offering up like 0% interest rates on cars. And this should probably make it attractive. I just hope the governments ultimately around the world start realizing that people got to make more than base minimum wages. And I think this could be the next move. And we have to keep our eye on that, because this is one of the Biden's mandates here, where they're talking about raising
federal minimum wage. Yeah.
This is great. I love that idea. And I hope that actually catches on throughout the world, because I think the lower earners are really the ones that are more in need of cash rather than the upper earners. So tax the rich, give to the poor. That's the way it should be for the next little while. I moved off my strict monitor's view to somewhat of a Keynesian view for the next few years. And that's very surprising. I never thought I'd be saying that, but I'm certainly leaning towards that end of the stick right now, as far as economics are concerned.
So, Stephen, looking as well at China, I mean, how are increasing virus cases and travel restrictions going to be impacting oil demand there, especially ahead of the Lunar New Year? Do you see a risk of downward pressure on oil prices?
Well, there's, this is the case right now. The market's trying to digest what's going on there. Look, we've currently downgraded oil demand forecast because of the extended lockdowns in Europe. That was the first thing entering the year. Then second of all, we've had to down-ballot China consumption. So yeah, it is a risk to the view. However, on the positive side of the case here, we've got really proactive measures from Saudi Arabia. They must have had their crystal ball out, because this is just perfect, because we're going to have 1 million barrels per day removed between February and March. And this will provide enough wiggle room here to draw OECD inventories lower. So yeah, oil prices will be zigging and zagging like they always do, but I think there's that base support, one coming from the proactive measures from Saudi Arabia, and then number two, the rollouts of the vaccines that I mentioned that are coming on pretty quickly in the US and ultimately in all parts of the world. I think that'll be given number one priority from policymakers globally. And to a degree, it's going to support oil prices until they can lift off, which I eventually see oil prices moving up considerably higher over the next 2 to 3 months. And that should benefit the Malaysian ringgit and also benefit a lot of the oil and gas counters on the Bursa Malaysia.
Stephen, do you have a range for which you expect oil to move? It's currently at about $55.40 for Brent right now, up 7% year to date. Do you have a range for this year?
Yeah, I think we're pretty close to the base right now for the remainder of the year. I don't think we're going to see, you know, even the COVID scare out of China, which is really carrying the backbone for physical demand, didn't really get Brent below 55. And I think there's another $10 in Brent price is probably more towards a 65. I don't think we're in a commodity super cycle, or sorry, a oil price super cycle that some may allude to. I think 65 will be top end target for 2021. I mean, let's just face the logic behind it here. The higher we go in prices, the more supply will come back to the market, one from U.S. shale producers and ultimately from OPEC themselves. And this is going to be something that's going to be the rally capper ultimately in 2021.
What are the factors driving the Chinese yuan to recent highs against the dollar? Is this in relation to the Lunar New Year?
Well, it's actually been weakening a little bit, right? And I think that's just slightly because of the COVID situations and also the fact that there's a lot of economic uncertainty as the knock-on effects. But getting back to your point about the strengthening trend that it has been on, that's just basically a reaction function because China came out of the COVID crash a lot quicker than most other countries. Therefore, their economy recovered. Therefore, the currency strengthened. Look at the export markets, for instance, right now. They are supplying the world with exports, and that's a really big positive put through when it comes to the yuan. I expect that to balance out as developed markets open. But I think the path of least resistance for Asia currencies is stronger. The ringgit, for instance, should be stronger because of higher oil prices, and also as more supply chains open up in developed worlds, their exports will start to go outward to other centers rather than just to China. So I think that'll be quite positive for local exporters also.
Thanks so much for speaking with us this morning, Stephen. That was Stephen Innes, Global Chief Market Strategist over at Axie, giving us a look at what's been happening in the international markets and, of course, mentioning autumn demand as well. And we do have some auto news. German carmaker Volkswagen reported a profit of $12.2 billion last year in what's been called a show of pandemic resilience. Now, they looked set to record big losses in the early months of COVID-19, but it did see a bit of a late surge.
It was boosted by a rebound in premium car sales in China. VW also said that it had undertaken aggressive cost-cutting measures, which led to a clash with some of its union leaders last summer, and I hope they have sorted that out. It's also worth noting that last week, VW said it narrowly missed strict EU targets on the carbon dioxide emissions and faced a fine of over $120 million.
Yeah, but what is that $120 million to the $12 billion in profit they expected to make, right? But this also relates to that earlier point that we were talking to about with Stephen about the auto demand and the chip shortage. There's also a lot of auto manufacturers were essentially stumped because they didn't expect this kind of demand, and then we had this demand, and now they don't have enough chips, and they can't produce the cars that are needed. But there is this increased demand for vehicles because on the back of all of this, there is also that whole safety situation, right? People just feel safer in their own cars as opposed to public transport at this point. So let's see how the auto industry does this year.
Indeed, this is one of the things that we will be watching as we move forward into 2021. But right now, some messages coming up for you. And up next, do most MPs reject the national emergency? Is there a move within UMNO to oust its party president? Stay tuned for that conversation. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.